welcome to episode 3 of season 2 of Asteroids in Exile. I'm Niv.
I'm Martin. Hello.
And this is obviously Asteroids in Exile, so welcome everyone. We got a pretty big show this time because we got a lot of stuff to catch up on. I think Martin and I haven't spoken in a while, and the last episode was purely Iron Fist focused. Yeah, so we got a lot of news in the last couple weeks, and there's been a lot of trailers released, so yeah, we got a bumper one. Anything exciting that you're looking forward to, Martin?
Trailer-wise?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Of course.
Or anything in general.
There's so much stuff to be excited about. And I see third thing on our list is the second trailer for Guardian of the Galaxy, revealing Kurt Russell as a certain human-sized planet, which is such an odd decision, but a great actor, a great look. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to that movie, especially since you told me about the new color grading method that Marvel is using.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's that they're actually using a new one, but it looks a lot better than the previous movies. You know, previously we talked about how all of their colors were kind of muted and washed out, whereas this time in this trailer, it looks like it's a lot more bright and colorful, and it might be signifying some sort of change as we go towards Infinity War and the next phase of the Marvel movies. Because even as we'll talk about later, even the Thor Ragnarok pictures, they look very bright and colorful. And if they mute down the colors, it's not going to have the same effect. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that.
No, especially the psychological thing with Guardians of the Galaxy being a bit more lighthearted in tone and much more out there than the other Marvel movies, in the sense of that they can go all out because it's in space, set with all kinds of aliens and stuff.
And that might be it, right? I mean, it just because they're not on Earth, so the colors in space are much deeper and brighter than everything else.
Yeah, because it's set in space, black gives you a great contrast.
Maybe that's what it is.
I can't help myself. Mantis is freaking me out.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. The makeup routine is taking an angle grinder to her face to get the smooth skin, and afterwards polishing it. So the smooth texture of this, or the lack of texture on the skin, is freaking me out.
Right. Ah, that's an interesting one. She's an alien, so she's supposed to look maybe a little bit like a snail type. Skin is what I was thinking of.
She's
like
an insect, I think.
Yeah.
It creeps me out.
Fair enough. She
looks alien, yeah.
I think maybe that's what they're going for. They want to make it uncomfortable. We want to make her sexy and a little bit freaky, like freaky looking.
Yeah, she definitely gets my freaky on.
But overall, I think it was a good trailer. I think it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I almost don't want to see any more now because, again, you know, coming as the movie's not that far away, I just want to see it. I don't want to see any more trailers.
Yeah, it's time. And it's out in May, so we don't have
to. It's like a month away, right? Yeah. The countdown begins.
It's the 7th of May or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of freaky aliens, Alien Covenant. What are your thoughts?
I'm very excited over this. I mean, I saw Life last week, and that was just not very good. It was like a real, like a poor man's version of Alien, you know? Just didn't bring anything new to the table, was the way I kind of reviewed it with friends. They should have just not... That movie would have redeemed itself. There was all these rumors going around that it was supposed to be, or it could have been the origin story for Venom, because Life was made by Sony.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which owns the Spider-Man program, Spider-Man franchise. And Venom being like an alien symbiote that comes to Earth, and then finally, you know, finds Peter Parker. If they had backdoored Venom at the end, that would have been
would have been amazing, especially...
That would have been really cool. Sorry, I just I just sort of thought about the words that I just used in my head. But if they had made it that it was Venom, that whatever the thing is that they brought down ended up being Venom, that would have been really cool. That would have redeemed the movie for me.
And
you know?
I've heard a part of the movie is that the alien life is siphoning off You know, I don't want to spoil the movie.
It's like feeding off.
It's feeding off one of the cast members.
Well, it feeds on. It seems to be feeding on like lots of things in the movie. Like it's not very clear on what it is and how it actually works. So, as they kind of find it, and then as it develops, I guess over the course of the movie, it changes form a few times, which is quite cool and is quite interesting. And then I think it would have been super easy if they had just reshot even the last 2 minutes of the movie and not even had to reshoot anything. They could have just animated it in and they could have laid the seeds for it to become Venom in the end. You know, I think it would have been such a classy move. Like it would have made the point of that movie actually have a purpose, because it felt like it was just like, oh, we wanted to make Alien, but we didn't have the rights, so we made this kind of weird, poor version in the end. Because like even none of the cast, it was a pretty good cast, but none of the cast even like shone in the movie. Like Jake Gyllenhaal's character was kind of, it's just really weak. Like I didn't understand any of the characters, and they could have just cast nobodies in and spent more time on the production. The production was really good, so you know that they could have made it even better if they'd not had such a big cast. Like, I don't understand why they made that movie at all. Anyway, this is an Alien Covenant review, not a life review. But you know, there you go. That's why I'm looking forward to Alien Covenant. Like, despite that Prometheus was so weird, I'm really hoping Alien Covenant is gonna be everything. It's going to be everything that we were expecting from another Alien movie, you know, to actually have having the alien in it, you know, for once, as opposed to what Prometheus was.
Yeah, but I think Prometheus really set out to be something outside the Alien franchise, and the decision to include it into the Alien canon was made during the production. At least it feels that way. So many things in the movie feel shoehorned in.
Yeah, it was just a very weird movie. And it is. It's almost like he wanted to make a movie that wasn't an Alien movie, but then he couldn't not make an Alien movie, and it just felt really strange. But anyway, hopefully we can just move on from that with Alien Covenant and forget that Prometheus ever existed.
I don't know, man, because you know the premise of Covenant feels like Prometheus 2. We got Danny McBride in. something like that.
Yeah. We just have to see what they can come up with. I mean.
what comes out of on the back end?
All right. And then so the other big trailers dropping this week was the Justice League trailer. It's the first, I think, official. Well, they've released so much already, but this is the first official trailer, right?
Yeah.
What was your impression when you saw it?
It looks miles better than anything DC has put out since they tried to find a foot in the movie market with their characters. But as awesome as everything looks, I'm still not convinced that the end product will be a coherent thing. I mean, it looks the small interactions between Aquaman and Batman on the Batmobile and such stuff, and Commissioner Gordon referencing that Batman seems to open up to other people a bit more. That was fun, but I wished we would have gotten a look at Steppenwolf for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and not just parademons and some characters that we've already seen. And I think that Cyborg's CG still looks not weak, but odd.
Yeah, Cyborg I'm not convinced on. I think the character, the whole design doesn't look good.
Yeah.
You know, I think they really shortchanged the Cyborg character by having a character that, you know, you think about it in terms of like, if you want to dress up for Halloween, if you want to go out with your friends as the Justice League, like no one's going to want to be Cyborg. It's just such a stupid costume. You know, they could have made it cool. Like they could have done some really cool stuff with this, with the cybernetics, but they covered like 98% of him. He's only got like half his face showing or something. Like it's a really odd kind of, costume. Like, I don't think it looks good, and I don't know how it's going to show on screen, but hopefully with the animated version of it, when you see it moving and in action, like you said, it doesn't look as weak as it is looking in trailers.
Yeah. And he covers up the human half of his face at one point and flies off. And I thought that's it evokes Iron Man to some degree. Why must he come? Perhaps there's an explanation for that, you know, the wind.
And so what I was thinking, right, is that he's got this, and I don't know where, he's got this battle between like the mother box cybernetic part of him and the human part of him. And when he has the face mask on, that's when he actually allows the mother box or whatever it is to take over. So he's not in control. But isn't that Black Beetle? Like, or Blue Beetle, actually? That's effectively the Blue Beetle storyline. Right?
Yes, yeah. Effectively, yeah.
So I think Blue Beetle would have been a much cooler character to put in the show rather than Cyborg, you know?
Blue Beetle would have been amazing.
I want to, like, Blue Beetle in the Young Justice TV show, in the fights against Black Beetle and stuff, are just so cool.
Yeah.
And the potential of that character as well, and the internal struggle of the character, is so well done in the Young Justice TV show. They could have really, hopefully they don't steal that, well, so it's like a double-edged sword. Hopefully they give Cyborg some sort of character development, even if it is the Blue Beetle one, with that internal struggle between the humanity and the robot part of him.
Yeah.
But then that's also, you know, that's going to steal it from Blue Beetle, that's a part of his character, you know.
But he would have fit much better in this, and we had a chance to shoehorn Ted Kord in it, the Blue Beetle before Jaime Reyes.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been amazing. You know, I think Ted Kord.
I think to me, the attraction of Cyborg was always that he was a comedian with Garfield, right? The, I forgot his character name.
Beast Boy. Yeah.
Beast Boy. Yeah, they were the comedy duo. And I mean, that's what Teen Titans and all those other shows like really played on. Whereas here, they all look so serious, first of all.
Yeah.
Except I think they've given the comedy duo thing to Aquaman and The Flash. Like, I really hope Aquaman and The Flash, they just look cool. They're the two standouts for me. Aquaman just looks so awesome. Especially that scene at the end of the trailer when he comes in, he's like, dressed like a bat. I dig it.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And it's cool to see Jason Momoa sort of do something that's not just like a gruff, Conan the Barbarian, Khal Drogo type character. So that's really cool. And I really want to see him bring out like the regal aspects of Aquaman, because he is the king of Atlantis, right? So it'll be interesting to see how he does that. And The Flash looks really cool as well. Like, they show a couple of scenes and how they've differentiated it from the TV show, where he's got these kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. They're almost like yoga poses as he's like dodging bullets and stuff, you know? So it's cool. And, even the way he like kind of moves really fast and you just kind of see him like zip around to the next position, but they don't show you him running in slow motion like they do in the TV show.
Yeah.
So that part's realized pretty well, and even the kind of the lightning effects that he's got as well. It's blue lightning.
Yeah, instead of yellow lightning, I think that's cool too. But the suit is strange. But then if somebody can move, it feels to me it seems like it distorts his proportions. He looks so alien, so far removed from resembling a human being. But then, you know, if you could move at how did I read it today, pseudoscience sheet levers of speed, if you can move that fast, you probably contort yourself in unknown positions.
Yeah, well, that's the function of the suit, really, isn't it? It's that it kind of won't burn away as he's moving that fast. So it's actually designed to enable him to move fast and not just burn all the clothes off him.
But you know what? That trailer gave me, at least it gave me hope.
Yeah.
That this could be a turnaround point.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of like structure and storytelling, it's not going to be as bad as Suicide Squad, which was just a scrambled egg mess. But it is still, at the end of the day, it's still Joss Whedon making this movie. So I think at the very least, you know, in terms of like expectation setting, it's going to be like Batman v Superman or even Man of Steel. You know, like that's kind of the average that we have to aim for and hope it's just above that, at least a little bit.
And, you know, quick correct. You mentioned Joss Whedon. It's Zack Snyder.
Did I say Joss Whedon?
Yeah. Because I got really excited there for a moment because I thought, did they change the director last minute?
No, I definitely meant Zack Snyder. Joss Whedon's awesome. So we'll get to that in a second.
You won't.
Maybe because I've got the show notes in front of me. Right? So it's Joss Whedon's name is like front and center. Cool. All right. So yeah, so Justice League looks good. We're excited. Just, you know, I think, there's some good stuff to look forward to, and I hope it finally can redeem itself for us. Wonder Woman continues to look awesome, so I'm just, again, we're getting to the stage where that's almost upon us, right? Is that June?
June, yes. And it's good that they don't show us new things in the trailer. You know, Lego spoiled Ares via a Lego set that is going to be released soon. But I'm glad that the trailers focus on the things that are established and have been seen, and we don't get too much new things, and we are going to be surprised at the cinema if some other things happen, some other characters show up, some of the
and I think
actors.
it's a vindication of the Warner Brothers approach, which is to get like auteur storytellers and filmmakers to make their movies rather than having it all controlled like Marvel does.
Yep.
And Patty Jenkins, you know, in directing Wonder Woman, hopefully can actually bring a different perspective and like at the end of the day, tell a really good story about the Wonder Woman character. And so far it's very promising that in the trailers, that's what we're seeing. You know, it looks like it's going to be different to the other movies, which is good. It's going to be its own thing. And the perspective from a female director on a female hero like this, which is such a symbol. I'm really looking forward to see what they do with it.
Yeah, it definitely looks more confident than Justice League at this point.
Yeah. And so much, I don't know, that just those early scenes on Themyscira just look so bright and sumptuous. You know, they just look
something
awesome.
We haven't seen from a DC movie yet.
Yeah. Exactly, like it's all shot in the dark. It's a great line. I can't tell you. I watched Boss Baby last night, and there's a great line in there from a wizard character.
Yeah,
I'm not going to spoil it. Boss Baby is an okay. I went in with like really low expectations. So this is a random Boss Baby review. I went in with really low expectations. But I think, I also heard somebody else at work told us that it's not really a movie made for adults, like, you know, like Shrek and stuff.
Yeah.
And while that is true to an extent, I felt that a lot of the jokes were very much like 30 Rock and like Mad Men style jokes, like about working in an office and that sort of thing. And I don't know how kids would actually get a lot of those jokes. So I thought it was quite funny. Like, I quite enjoyed it. It wasn't like a brilliant movie or anything, but it was definitely enjoyable.
Okay. Because we joked at work yesterday about it. Colic had his son with him. Mm-hmm. You know, the one guy at the show in a suit looked like Boss Baby, and we made impressions of him if he had the proportions of a baby and acted in the show that was happening on stage. Yeah. So that's my review of Boss Baby. Yeah.
Right. Pseudo review. All right, cool. So, two more trailers that we wanted to talk about. So, the next one was Spider-Man Homecoming. So, that dropped, what? That was like last week?
Yeah, on Thursday. Thursday.
Yeah. So, what do you think? I'll let you go first.
I have no idea how to react because, you know, it won't be an origin story, and it feels good for an actor that said he doesn't want to want to act in any of those genre movies, Michael Keaton puts in a good performance. You know, these short scenes that we've seen, he feels like an evil Tony Stark to a certain degree. And Tom Holland looks okay, is an understatement. I think finally we got a decent Spider-Man actor and
contentious
look.
Go on.
Not
about Tom Holland being Spider-Man, but the fact that we now finally have a decent actor.
So
I'm a massive Andrew Garfield fan. Really? But I didn't like Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man.
No,
but anyway,
it was asshole Peter Parker, and then nothing more. That's not. I guess that's not. Not Tom Holland's fault. Yeah, it's not Tom Holland's fault because the actor's name you just mentioned escaped me. Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield.
It wasn't Andrew Garfield's fault. It's probably a script fault. But I didn't like those movies. Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2 weren't good. And Tom Holland brings this. He brings out this vulnerable, unsure Peter Parker side. That were there in the Tobey Maguire thing. But I don't know, Tobey Maguire was only really good in the second Spider-Man movie, and the first and the third didn't really connect with me. Thought the second one is still one of my favorite superhero movies. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited to see Spider-Man come home.
Yeah. I mean, so just on the actors, like just on the cast, I think Michael Keaton looks really cool. I'm really excited. And like you said, like for the irony of like he was in Birdman complaining about having played a washed up superhero character. And he's like, I'm never getting in that suit again. And now he's literally playing a Birdman in this movie. Yeah. It's just, you know, karma's a bitch sometimes, I guess. Michael Keaton's probably just loving the irony, hopefully. But he looks great. Like he looks great. The scenes and the way he's playing the character looks really awesome. And what I've heard is he's playing effectively like a small business owner who was who had a what was it like a like they would clean up after all of the superhero battles and stuff.
Damage control.
Yep. There's a word like that vultures do that. So he's playing a character called the Vulture. And that type of business, I can't remember the words escaping.
Feasting on carcasses, yeah. What do vultures do?
Scavenging?
Scavenging, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so he's effectively playing a scavenger, I guess, after all these big battles. And he finds all of that technology, and that's how he ends up building the suit that he has, effectively, which is the Vulture suit. So he is kind of like a Tony Stark. It's just he's kind of reclaiming all of this technology that's been left over, like alien tech and whatever. And that suit just looks amazing. Like those wings, they're like prehensile. You know, they're like he can use them as fingers. He can use them to lift things up. He can, you know, it looks like it's even more than what the Iron Man suit can do. So it looks pretty cool. And so what ends up happening, obviously, is that Tony Stark's company. So it's almost like this big corporate entity starts gobbling up all these smaller companies. And that's his motivation and what sort of where he starts fighting back against the big bad corporate Stark empire.
I hope that they bring out the human side of that story, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, the Vulture is the bad guy, but did he really act out of sheer badness? Or is it just his quest to survive in a dog-eat-dog world?
Yeah, I mean it's a good story and a good question to ask in the current, I guess, economic climate, right? To explore those ideas in the context of a superhero movie would be quite interesting. And at the end of the day, I mean, there's a right way of doing things, and
there's a wrong way,
potentially evil and psychopathic way of doing things. So you could still have that discussion even if your character's a psychopath, you know. Because it's quite interesting. It's a quite interesting setup. Because if you think about, like, even go back to Amazing Spider-Man 2 with Electro, the setup and the character of Electro was just done so badly. His motivation for being and stuff like that. Like, it just was kind of a caricature. Whereas hopefully here, like you said, they can actually explore some of those themes and do it in the context of this movie.
Yeah, especially
since being a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, and especially since they can use characters like Tony Stark and stuff, you can really broaden the horizon of that story.
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, you've got Tony Stark on one side who's also got his own way of trying to do good, but it seems to, you know, his way is a could be kind of heavy-handed when you come of that, you know, big corporate entities just, you know, eating all the little guys. And then you've got a little guy who's fighting back against that.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man's effectively caught in the middle, especially since in the Avengers, not was it Avengers? In Civil War, he effectively said, you know, when Peter Parker and Tony Stark are having the conversation in his bedroom and he asks him, why are you doing it? He's all like, it's about standing up for the little guy.
Yeah.
You know, so how does that play out when you've got the big corporate Stark, like Enterprise, you know, totally ruining the company prospects for the little guy who is the Vulture in this case?
Yeah.
Quite interesting. I don't know whether they're going to go down that route, obviously, but it's quite interesting just to see what they do with that.
You know, at least acknowledge it. I think that is that's the thing to do. Acknowledge the idea and plant the seeds for people to think further than what they've seen. I think that's enough, because we are going to the cinema to watch Spider-Man to be entertained.
No, I go for heavy intellectual stimulation. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, you're
I'm going
you're,
to borrow that
you're
line
right.
from the art because of the intellectual stimulation that I experience every time I watch those movies.
Especially Suicide Squad. Yeah. It makes me scratch my head to understand what the hell is going on. So there's another awesome line in the Spider-Man trailer, which I thought was really cool. When Tony Stark tells him, I'm taking the suit away from you, and he's like, I'm nothing without the suit. And Tony Stark's like, well, and that's why you shouldn't have it. If you're nothing without the suit, that's why you shouldn't have it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, that's a cool line. Like that is one of those things that, you know, like you said, you just want to sow the seeds in there because the implications of that and like kind of the I guess the philosophy behind it and like kind of, it's almost like a proto with great power comes great responsibility. Like Tony Stark's, you know, he's going to end up telling Peter Parker that line, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like Uncle Ben's gone. So Tony Stark's now going to replace Uncle Ben as that mentor type figure and like sort of sets him on that path.
And we see him act or perform in a homemade costume.
Yeah. Well, that was actually, to your point, I mean, the trailer gave away the whole story of the movie.
Yeah.
So if you watch the trailer, like almost in synchronous serial order, it tells you exactly how the whole movie is going to go.
Yeah.
which is bad, but I guess it does set a good expectation for what you're about to see, I guess.
Perhaps they'll flip the tables on us on some things, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, true. Let's see how smart they are.
We haven't seen the after credit scene yet.
The only reason I'm going in to watch this movie is to watch the after credits scene. I love it. I'm showing up. I'm showing up an hour and a half late just so I can sit through the Yeah. But no, it looks cool. It looks very, very promising so far. And the release date for Spider-Man Homecoming is
July, I think.
That's in July?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's not that far away. Oh my God.
So it's still a while away, but that's good. But yeah, I'm very, very positive about it. And then the trailer that you haven't watched, but I did.
Yeah.
So Stephen King's It came out last week as well. And very cool. I mean, the trailer is, it's freaky. It's freaky and bordering on scary in some bits. And I think I'm going to go another like 20 years without having a love for clowns after this movie.
You just quit your therapy and you can't go to...
Yeah, I know. I just paid off the last of my therapy bills and now I've got to go in again. So yeah, I really don't like clowns after seeing the first Stephen King's It, which was in the 90s. They had a two-part TV movie, I think.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm referring to. I haven't read the book, but, you know, that the two-part TV movie that they made was just ridiculous and scared me off clowns forever. So this is going to be like, watching this movie is going to be like confronting my fears.
Therapy in itself.
Yeah, it's going to be like exposure therapy. So I'm going to have to watch the trailer like a whole bunch of times and then go watch the movie just so I can see if I can sit through it.
Yeah, I'm really looking for, looking forward. I'm more looking forward to the reviews because it's, I think it's the first time that we get the remake of a Stephen King movie. And
oh, really?
I think so. I think they haven't remade anything.
They remade Carrie, didn't they?
Did they?
I don't know if they remade it, but
I'm not sure.
There was a Carrie. At least maybe it could have been a sequel. I'm not sure. But anyway, this is the first I mean, this is his most famous material, though. Like, it is like the defining. Like, if you only read one Stephen King book, or watch one see a Stephen King story, I guess it's it, and like maybe The Shining would be the other one.
Yeah. But then we have the Dark Tower, hopefully the first movie, if it's good, coming out later this year. And I'm looking forward to that as well, because I like the books.
Yeah.
They were not amazing. I don't think it's his best work, but it stays consistently good. And you really feel like it's not a story, or rather it feels very personal. Like you sit down with Stephen King and have a talk, especially after his accident, after his car accident, which he works into the story as well. He appears as a character later in the book, and yeah, it's great. Right. I liked it a lot. I still like it a lot. I take out, is it book 5, Wolves of the Color? I reread this one this book almost every 2 years since I first read it.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Wow,
I dig the setting. I dig the whole the macho cowboy thing that's going on.
Yeah, it's nice. All right, I've not actually read any of the Dark Tower series, but it sounds like that's quite a big recommendation from your side.
Yeah,
I'll have to put it on the list.
It's also a big commitment. It's like 8 or 9 books, and yeah, I understand why. I understand people who are jumping off. I think it's the third book because I struggled with that one. And most of the people who I know who started reading the book jumped off after the third one or in the third one. And it took me 3 years to get through all the books. I started reading it in 2005.
Well, since I've started doing audiobooks, I'm just tearing through books. So let's see.
But that's good. Yeah, that's a good recommendation. Go do the audiobook. I started to do audiobooks as well, and it really is a time saver.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it on your drive or your commute into work.
Yeah.
And it, you know, makes that time very productive. So it's great. All right. Yeah. Audible should sponsor us.
We could ask them nicely.
We should start doing like an Audible review every episode.
Yes. Sneak one in.
Yeah. All right, cool. So those are the trailers. I think we covered everything that we wanted to talk about with the trailers. Think that's good. So we had a couple of other movie topics then. So we didn't do a Logan review previously. So to do a quick review of Logan now.
Let's talk about Logan.
So how do you want to start?
You know, there are so many high points, and which is amazing for a Wolverine solo movie that it came out good. I mean, it's
that it came out good. Yeah. The biggest surprise was that it was actually good.
Yeah, you know, I managed to keep my expectations low for Logan, and I'm really surprised that it really ended up being the swan song for this character. And it's sad that it took two movies to get to this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm around the same. I think if it had to end, this was the best ending. So this is obviously going to be a spoiler review. So yeah. If you haven't seen Logan yet, forward by about 10 minutes, maybe. Yeah, I mean, because we knew it was going to be Hugh Jackman's last movie. And it's funny, effectively, Wolverine and Hugh Jackman are interchangeable at this point.
Yeah.
And almost the same for Professor Xavier and Patrick Stewart as well. Like, they both said that they weren't coming back after this one. And as an ending, like, I thought for those characters and the portrayals of Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart of those characters, it's just brilliant. I really hope, you know, Patrick Stewart gets a Best Supporting Actor nomination out of his performance in Logan, because he was just fantastic.
Yeah, that was a brave thing to do, to really show not only an old mutant or an old person with so much power, but in general a person that we followed from his beginnings with the X-Men. but not with with Patrick Stewart, but the character with whoever played him in the reboot movies, and go to end up as a person suffering from is it dementia?
Yeah. I mean, it's some sort of dementia.
Yeah.
Or like just sort of like aging.
Yeah, and carrying this burden. I mean, the scene where Wolverine helps him onto the toilet at the gas station. Yeah. I mean, that's such a human scene, and it shows the bond between the characters. You know how much they went through together, and how much they are codependent, because Logan needs Xavier as well to function in this world, to have a purpose.
Yeah. And it's effectively the story of like taking care of an aging parent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it so good, is that despite the fact that these are superpowered beings or mutants in this case, at the end of the day, it was a very human story. Like you said, it was something that was utterly relatable, no matter where you are in the world, you know? And I think, taking care of an aging parent, aging yourself, you know, when you're in your 20s, you don't really think about that too much, you know, because you kind of still have that invincible feeling. But like, as you start getting aches and pains, and you sort of see that scene with Wolverine on the bed trying to get his arthritic claw out, like the last blade that won't fully retract or won't fully extend, you really feel it. Like it's done really well.
Yeah. Stephen Merchant, it's Excalibur, such a painful, you know, a mutant that didn't get the glorious powers, so to say.
Yeah.
And his performance is amazing. He's such a tortured performance. I felt sad for him. I mean, he died gloriously.
Well, he died with honor, I guess, if you can say anything. But yeah, I think Caliban, the use of Caliban was interesting.
Yeah.
Especially since Caliban also showed up in Age of Apocalypse. Yeah. So like, wait, that's like, is that the same person? He looked completely different. He's really, and that was like, you know, half the point is that we've seen all these characters fighting all these crazy battles, fighting godlike bad guys, but this is them at their rawest and their most low.
Yeah.
You know, you see them really brought down. And it's sad. It's tragic. I mean, as well as the ending being sad, just the fact of what the world ended up being, like, that's the saddest part. So as an X-Men fan and watching these movies for the last like 17 years now, the fact that the X-Men lost the larger war, so everything that they fought for and every battle against Magneto and Apocalypse and all the other, you know, fights that they've had along the way, at the end of the day, Xavier ends up killing them all, and they don't actually beat the final plan that the bad guys had, which was to just eradicate mutants from the face of the earth, you know? So they lose that battle. They get killed by their own mentor and teacher. He himself is tortured both by that and just his own aging. And it's just like such a sad ending for these characters who were so impossibly invincible for like the whole, you know, the last 17 years. To see them now was just really, it was a really sad moment. Like overall, this was like as bad as Manchester by the Sea. You know? It's just, it was tough. Like I actually know like fans of these movies and these characters who like cried.
Yeah, perfectly understandable.
At the thought of the movie and what happens. Yeah, it was crazy. Really cool. Like really, really enjoyed it. I think they really like hit it out of the ballpark, as they say in America, with this one.
And as you've mentioned, the rawness of the characters, and then you have the young mutants, the new mutants, in a way. And you know, those are at their best when they are raw, especially X-23. I forgot her name. I mean, first of all, that kid is one of the few kids in a movie that didn't bother me.
Yeah, she was great. She was really cool.
Their portrayal was just awesome. I mean, the daddy part was a bit, over the top, because she's basically a clone.
Yeah, and plus that was kind of like, sort of kind of like hitting it in your face at that point. You're like, okay, we get it. You don't have to like make it so obvious. Like if you didn't say that line, we would have got it. You know? It's like for the one person in the audience who's like, I don't know what's going on here. We better make her say daddy. But it was cool. And I think it was like really, it was really cool the way they put the movie together too. Like the story was laid out in a way to really show those things. Like even Xavier staying with that family, Eric LaSalle's family, in any other version of the X-Men, somebody at some point, and Xavier himself would have said, we can't linger here because these people are in danger the longer we stay here.
Yeah.
You know? Like if Cyclops was there, you just know that's, you know, Scott Summers would have said that. You know?
We have to move on.
And even if Scott Summers had said that and it was a younger Xavier, if the younger Xavier had said, no, it's fine, we can stay, that would have, you would have almost felt like this is a more wiser person talking and they know something that you don't. Yeah. You know, it's kind of coming from a Gandalf type figure saying, no, it's fine, we can stay, nothing's going to happen. And so you almost want to believe that when the Xavier in this version of the story says, no, it's fine, let's just stay. But he's not saying it from a point of wisdom or a point of knowing something. He's saying it effectively because he's being selfish at that stage. Yeah. And, you know, and that selfishness obviously putting everyone in danger to give himself effectively, like he says, like the first time he's felt like he's been at home and felt in a place that's like a home with like people you love for the first time in so long. So he wanted that. And it's almost like he maybe knew that he was going to die. I don't know, that maybe that's beyond his power scope anyway, but
yeah, but I think he also wanted to provide at least a small bit of normality for Logan and the next 23.
Yeah.
And you know, it was Eric LaSalle. Perhaps he has a bottle of Soul Glow from coming to America in the closet.
So I saw you wrote that. So what's going on there?
Yeah, because we watched a movie at work recently. And then we watched Logan. And yeah, afterwards, you know, we talked about the movie. And one of the co-workers said, you know, every time I saw Eric LaSalle, I had the Soul Glow song in my head. And it was exactly the same thing that happened with me. And I also thought when we witness him coming out of the house after young Wolverine slaughtered his family, that was the first time in my life that I thought, would somebody please kill Eric LaSalle? Because after watching the gruesome murder of his family, I would feel bad for the movie to let him stay alive with the grief.
Yeah. No, that was brutal, that whole sequence. I mean, not only... You know, the way it was played out as well, you know, and it's really interesting because I've been reading, I think I mentioned before, I'm reading that book Story on like how to write screenplays, and a large part of writing and building character is about making your characters make decisions, because it's through making decisions that the character actually reveals character. And that scene where X-24 is walking down the steps and he's got the girl, X-23, sort of tied up inside that, whatever that little, I'm going to call it the X-23 carry case, because that's kind of what it was like. He's walking down the steps, and Logan's at the bottom of the steps looking, just, you know, like looking at himself, at X-24, which is his clone, walk past him, holding the girl in tow. And so he has to make a decision. So Logan has to make a decision. Do I go after the girl, or do I go upstairs to check on Xavier? And so he pauses in that moment. Like, so it was a fantastic scene, because how they filmed it for like this younger version of Logan walking down the steps as an older version of Logan watches on was just really cool, first of all. Then he also has to make that decision. And in the decision, he chooses to go up to Xavier. So you can see where his priorities lie. You know, it's not with the girl. It's not with X-23. He goes after Xavier, and his main concern through that whole scene, while the family's getting slaughtered and the neighbors are getting slaughtered too, he's not concerned with them. He just needs to make sure Xavier knows that it wasn't him. You know, because like you said, for everything that they've been through, and for just for the last 18 years of Wolverine and Xavier's relationship, his main concern is just making sure that Xavier knows that it wasn't him.
Yeah.
It was just such a fantastically done scene. And I really like that.
Up to this point, every time he has to decide whether to go for the girl or Xavier, he chooses Xavier. And it's also so much in character with Wolverine. He may be selfish, but he also looks out for the people that matter to him. And in this instance, it's Xavier.
Well, he's got incredible sense of loyalty, right?
But then you see the photo of Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart hugging during the production on the porch of the house. It's just heartbreaking to see those two men together, and especially in that scene when it wasn't me. It was hard to watch.
So, I mean, definitely, I'm waiting for like the 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray release, and I'm buying it. I don't even have a Blu-ray player, but I need to buy that.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that I know that I'm just going to love forever. So, really cool.
One of the best superhero movies ever,
and
since we got superhero movies.
Well, I think, yeah, like, hopefully, you know, they learn from that. I think Fox, in trying to build its brand, seems to be taking a lot more risks in that regard as well. I think going with a lower budget type of movie that has a lot more risks in terms of its storytelling. So Deadpool, for example, and now Logan, in doing a really, it's a drama, really. Like, it's a character-driven drama rather than a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get a lot more of that. And it's like the antithesis. It's like the opposite of what Zack Snyder is doing with his movies, you know? So Zack Snyder has these beautiful visuals and these iconic scenes that you can kind of screen capture and blow up and like print them out and put them on your wall kind of moments. But that's all they are, you know? When you string them all together, it watches like a trailer because the story is just so all over the place. You don't know what's going on.
And the production design was amazing as well because, yes, the movie plays in a future, but it's just the small changes. It feels more real because we have self-driving trucks and elaborate displays and some cyber enhancements.
Yeah.
But that's it. The rest looks rather contemporary, and that's a more believable future. And, you know, don't want to go too deep in it, but given current politics and stuff, it is a possible, it feels like a possible future. Very, very bleak, but like it's looming on the horizon, and it's not too over the top, shiny cities and dark slums. It just looks real.
Yeah, it's not hyper real. It's not a highly stylized version of the future. It looks like it's just within grasp, you know? It's just about to happen. All right, so from the depths and despair of Logan, which was awesome, let's do a flip to the Thor Ragnarok picks that were released. I think it was it Entertainment Weekly that those were on?
I think so, yeah. Those were amazing. Those were amazing. I'm looking forward to that movie.
It definitely looks like something out of the 80s. Like,
yeah.
that's what I'm excited about. It looks like it's like Masters of the Universe level design with like fluoro neon hypercolor t-shirts and stuff. Like, it's just
absolutely, absolutely. And Jeff Goldblum's makeup as he's not the collector, the Grandmaster, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He looks amazing. He looks so great, and I can't wait to see the performance.
Yeah. I mean, the collector, so the collector and the Grandmaster are kind of related, right? So the collector we saw in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, he was the one that they go to try to give the orb to. That was played by...
Benicio del Toro?
Yeah, that's the one, Benicio del Toro. And the Grandmaster and the collector are both elders of the universe, I think, in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
So they're kind of related in that way. And so they've got a very similar kind of look about them too. So when we first saw Benicio del Toro as the collector, he kind of looked like, I don't know what's going on right now. You know. And now that you see, I guess, his peer, who is the Grandmaster, with Jeff Goldblum, you're like, okay, I can see the connection. And this is just going to be like, this is going to be crazy.
Yeah, this is going to be amazing.
He does look good, and I pretty much like Jeff Goldblum in anything, so I'm looking forward to that. And then Thor. So the big thing with Thor is that, he's wielding two swords in this one. So he's lost the long hair. He's wielding two swords. So what happened to the hammer, Mjolnir? And his armor and stuff, it looks pretty cool. So it's obviously the gladiatorial Planet Hulk style storyline that we're going to get here. Hela, Kate Blanchett, looks really cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how they pull Hela off with all of her crazy power set, but also that massive headdress that I can't wait for her to see wearing on screen.
Yeah, and the thing is that those are only stills. When the whole thing is in movement and all the CG is added, I have no idea where this is going to end up.
Yeah. And so this is being directed by, is it Taika Waititi?
Yeah.
So I'm really looking, again, you know, we talked about bringing a different perspective into Wonder Woman from the director there. But I'm really looking forward to see what Taika Waititi brings into Thor Ragnarok. You know, it already looks so out of this world awesome that I can only imagine what else we're going to see. So I can't wait for the first trailer of that one.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, bringing a new perspective to a franchise. It's like changing the venue with Taika Waititi.
And we're seeing, you know, in terms of the Marvel movies, it's really, I think, especially the cosmic ones, there's a lot going on to open new doors, to expand the color palette and the opportunities of that universe. Like, yep. Doctor Strange really took things to, like, it literally opened up another dimension to how the Marvel universe works. And then with the cosmic side of things, so Guardians of the Galaxy and now Thor Ragnarok, it looks like just the diversity and the just the size of the universe is just getting bigger and bigger. And that's really cool.
You know, bringing in, I mean, I thought we see the boldest move with Kenneth Branagh directing the first Thor movie.
Yeah.
And now this, you know, and a new talent is still developing. So I'm really looking forward where Marvel, if Marvel keeps the bravery to make such decisions, and who else they're gonna win over to work on the things.
Because we don't know if there's, like, how clear the plan is beyond Phase 3, right? So beyond the Infinity War.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I think the Infinity War and those next two Avengers movies are going to change the landscape so much that it's almost too early to even think about about what that future is going to look like, because so much of what they've built so far is going to go away. Like, even from a business standpoint, you know that Iron Man, Captain America, all of their contracts are coming up, right? As well as their paychecks getting, you know, higher and higher each time they have to renegotiate. So, we're going to get to the end of Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. We're going to get to the end of Chris Evans as Captain America. And so what's going to happen with those characters and those roles, and who's going to take the spotlight? You know, Marvel is looking like it's not so much about the individual heroes. It's going to be more about the ensembles and the teams as we go forward. Because even now in, like, Thor Ragnarok, you're going to have the Hulk, you're going to have Doctor Strange. So it's already like a team-up movie that's happening there. And then all the Captain America movies, except for the first one, have been team-up movies as well. So it's going to be really interesting as we go forward to see how they kind of play those out. Because it's almost not going to be individual character stories. It's going to be like more the comic crossover storylines, like the big event storylines that we're used to seeing, where you've got multiple characters working together. So that's going to be fun.
It's going to be awesome, yeah.
It's going to be awesome, but you also think about, like, just as a general regular cinema goer, if you're just Joe Average, can you keep up with all this? Because at the end of the day, you know, that's the person they need to get in the cinema to watch the movies.
Yeah.
Because if it's just for comic book people, there's just not enough comic book people to justify spending all that money. That's the risk. Like, that's the game. So, yeah, I mean, we just have to wait and see what happens. But it's interesting to think about. All right. So that's Thor Ragnarok. And now Indiana Jones 5.
Yeah.
So what's happening here? I didn't actually read this article. So,
Disney agreed to do a new Indiana Jones movie, or they will continue the Indiana Jones franchise. And Harrison Ford is on board with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he gonna die in this one too?
I don't know.
Is he finally coming back and he's like, you know what, I'm doing it one more time and I need to die so that I can't come back?
And they get,
this thing's never gonna stop haunting me.
They get Shia LaBeouf and, you know, the bridge is in the jungle and not at some terminal on a planet.
And that last Indiana Jones movie was just horrible. Yeah. Really. was disappointed.
And I don't know how to feel about that because, you know, Disney will probably try and rekindle the magic behind the first three Indiana Jones movies. But I think that franchise is dead. I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark yesterday, and you can't replicate that anymore. Those movies, and it's strange to say that, those movies are from another time. You have to do something new. There's Uncharted out there, and there are talks about Uncharted movies. So why not make Nathan Drake this generation's Indiana Jones? The guy has the chops. There is the story. Why do we have to keep the old man come out of the retirement to show the whippersnappers how it's done?
Yeah. No, I fully agree with you. I think Indiana Jones is of a certain time in history. And like even the setting has to be that period of time where it was like you still had access to the Nazis. You still had access to the Cold War because that's the world that Indy existed in.
Yeah.
You know, the world now has changed. And I think people don't really relate to that as much anymore. Like the current generation, you think about the millennials out there. They don't have that as even like a pop culture reference, you know? And like how many of like kids these days are actually watching Indiana Jones movies? Whereas Nathan Drake has actually brought that type of movie and that genre into the current generation.
Yeah.
So you're right. They should be making Nathan Drake movies. The problem is Disney doesn't own Nathan Drake. So that's why they know Indiana Jones is their brand. So the question is, if they had to do it, can they bring Indiana Jones, or can they make a movie that's in the spirit of Indiana Jones, but for this generation? You know, and I think that's where they need to play their cards with Indiana Jones. So I think Harrison Ford can come back, but only as, I would say, like a mentor figure. So it would be more like a cameo role, and they would need to start setting up that successor as the key part of the movie. And I think that's why the last one failed, because even though they were trying to set up Shia LaBeouf's character as kind of the inheritor of the franchise, we didn't care about that character. We didn't care about Shia LaBeouf, you know, and even like Harrison Ford took such a central role in the story that it was almost like no one else can do this but me, you know?
Yeah.
So don't even bother about the kid because he's clearly useless.
The movie would have worked better if it wasn't an Indiana Jones movie. If they would have set up a completely new character, a new adventurer, or an old adventurer and his kid on the old adventurer's last crusade, so to say.
Yeah, and I think that's effectively where it needs to be. Like, I think if the, you know, you start the story centered on a new character, on the successor. And it's an origin story of the successor, you know? And in Indiana Jones himself is actually kind of the more mentor Gandalf type figure for that person.
Yeah.
And helps that person take the franchise forward.
Yeah.
Rather than, I don't know what that last movie was trying to do, but just clearly did it wrong anyway. But
I was just one of those attempts with bringing the lady from Raiders of the Lost Ark back. Yeah. Whoever she was.
I can't remember the name.
And I've seen the movie yesterday. Aging is great,
really?
Guys. Yeah.
You watched Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
No, Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, Bomb Man.
Bro. It's like, yeah, we don't watch that. We don't even talk about it. And yeah, I mean, anyway, so let's not worry about it.
Indy 5.
let's just see what, I don't know. Hopefully they don't just mess it up. Like, that new MacGyver series, they tried to update it, but it's so corny. I watched the first episode and haven't seen anything since. So I don't know whether it's actually improved over time, but I don't want them to do that. Like, I'm not saying do what they did with MacGyver. But anyway.
No, new name, new game.
Yeah. Ooh. Very good. All right. Cool. So let's end on a positive note with our movie news. And let's talk about the news that Joss Whedon's going to be doing a Batgirl movie. So is this confirmed or is this still just a rumor and they're in negotiations?
I think that's pretty much confirmed because they are scouting for actresses to portray Barbara Gordon. Right. So I think there's a Batgirl thing at least in development, and attaching Joss Whedon might be the best decision that DC has made on the movie front in a while.
Yeah. I mean, you know, going back to the discussion about Warner Brothers getting auteur directors, if they can give Joss Whedon latitude to really create something cool out of this character and out of this movie, I think it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
I have so much of faith in Joss Whedon.
Yeah, he will do he will do something unique with it. I'm sure of it. The only thing that bothers me a bit is that it's from what I've read, it's going to center on the not even the new 52 version, but the Rebirth version, the Batgirl of Burnside.
So I'm not down with all of the details of the Rebirth, but I mean, let's explore it. Let's go through it a little bit. So in the original story, Barbara Gordon gets paralyzed by the Joker, right?
Yes.
So she's in a wheelchair. So she is Batgirl. So her story is very cool in that she becomes Batgirl and Batman takes her on as Batgirl effectively. Like, so she becomes Batgirl under her own steam because she's like, I need to investigate some stuff and I need to do my own thing. So she kind of co-opts the Batman brand and she creates herself as Batgirl, and she goes out there and starts investigating, and Batman finds out about it and kind of lets her into the fold, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it goes down?
That's how it goes down originally. Then the Killing Joke happens.
And so that's the very famous Killing Joke storyline.
Yeah, then she gets better and gets back to being Batgirl. I haven't read any explanation to why she takes up the mantle of Batgirl again after the new 52.
Right. But I mean, I'm just going to interject. Are you trying not to give spoilers for the Killing Joke?
Oh, no, I thought, if people listen to a podcast about comics, they, and because of the, it was a prominent topic last year with the animated version of, she gets shot by the Joker in the spine and ends up in a wheelchair acting as the IT support Oracle.
She's more than just IT support.
No, she's the heart of the team. And And she remains a great character, I think, in the wheelchair, because a lot of people say, well, shouldn't she have been meandered out of the comics, out of the story after that incident? And I think that shows to her determination and her place in the Bat family that she's, and it sounds stupid, even in this state, she is still a valuable member and a pinnacle of the Bat family.
Yeah. And I mean, that is exactly what makes Barbara Gordon so cool as a character, is that she goes through this traumatic experience in the Killing Joke. She gets paralyzed by the Joker, but she continues to fight. Yeah. You know, she, even though she's in a wheelchair, she doesn't give up trying to fight. And she comes back as the Oracle, and she effectively helps with command and control support for the Bat family. So when like Nightwing and Batman and Robin are out in the field, she's the one that's kind of in their earpiece telling them what's going on and helping them get and infiltrate buildings and sort of do all of that sort of information recon to aid them while they're out in the field. So she continues to have like a massive effect and a massive contribution to the team, like you're saying. So that's the character that's talking to you when you play like Arkham Knight and like all of the Arkham games.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
Like Oracles.
I forgot that she's in there.
Yeah, so that's the voice that you're hearing. And then DC went through its thing where it just like resets its entire universe every now and again. And then in the New 52, they just randomly made her Batgirl again. Somehow found a cure for paralysis. And a lot of people were upset about that because, again, Barbara Gordon, even as Oracle, stood for something. Whereas when they sort of cut away that history for her and just put her back in the bat suit and just made her Batgirl again, I think they kind of erased that whole thing, right?
I'm not sure. As I've said, I'm so sorry to say that, but it didn't really interest me. And I especially lost interest when the whole Batgirl of Burnside thing started, when she moves into the hipster part of Gotham City. And I heard reviews from other people that read it, and I thought, nah, that's not for me. I wish they would have put a new character or an established character. I mean, we have Spoiler. How's her name? I forgot her name. Not Spoiler the Spoiler, but Spoiler character. It's
like, what? The character's name was Spoiler?
Yeah. She's Robin's girlfriend and gets killed by Leslie Thompson in the pre-New 52 continuity, but got revived, and she's now on the team that's in Detective Comics.
This is going a little bit down the well, but which Robin?
I think it was not Tim Drake. So the third one, not Jason Todd.
Yeah. Well, going back to the Joss Whedon Batgirl thing, it'll be interesting to see which part of Barbara Gordon's story he uses, because there's a lot of cool stuff that he could draw on. You know, all the pre-New 52 stuff, obviously.
And there are rumors that he's going for the Burnside thing. Mm-hmm. But she has a great costume there with the yellow Doc Martens and a purple suit.
Yeah.
The costume looks amazing. Modern. Okay. A modern interpretation of Batgirl, and going... it really emphasizes on the self-made vigilante, DIY vigilante theme, with which the character started before she got into the Bat family.
It'll be interesting to see, like, looking at the current costuming that we've got out of the Justice League and also Suicide Squad, there's a large range, you know? So I think there's definitely space for her to have yellow Doc Martens. Especially because they're also planning like Gotham City Sirens, so they're going to bring all the female characters together. I don't know where that's at in terms of its development, but it's at least...
I don't know too. I haven't heard of it for a while, but it would be great seeing Huntress and Black Canary together with Batgirl. It would be amazing.
Yeah, unfortunately, they've also confused those characters because there's also the TV versions of them. But hopefully, they can make their mark. On the big screen.
Does anybody remember Birds of Prey?
No. A lot of people are trying to forget. They're hoping that a lot of other people forget.
I've never seen it. I have to be honest about it.
It was just one of those like the Catwoman movie with Halle Berry. You know, it's one of those ones that's just like we don't have to try very hard. The people will come, and then it was just awful. You know. but going back to Joss Whedon, the other cool thing that I'm looking forward to with the Batgirl story is that the first Robin, Dick Grayson's story is also quite closely intertwined with the Batgirl story. So that also means it's potentially like a opportunity to get Nightwing and Robin on the scene as well and really start developing that extended Bat family.
I haven't thought about that. That would be amazing. That would be great.
Yeah, because I've been waiting for Robin, I mean, for a long time, a good version of Robin, especially since they teased the Robin costume in the Batman v Superman. Was it the Batman v Superman movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, right? So in the Bat Cave, as Ben Affleck's walking past, he's walking through the Bat Cave, there's an actual Robin suit with bullet holes in it. And scrawled on the suit is the Joker's writing saying, ha ha, the joke's on you, Batman. Alluding to the Jason Todd story, which is where the Joker kills the second Robin.
Yeah.
Which... if that is the suit of the second Robin, it means the first Robin, who's Dick Grayson, is out there running around, potentially as Nightwing. And the reason that Dick Grayson leaves Batman and says, I need to go out on my own, or one of the main reasons anyway, is because he was actually going out with / in love with Barbara Gordon, who becomes Batgirl. And Batman hid the fact from him that she was Batgirl.
That would be an interesting story.
Because... Nightwing's whole thing was, or Robin's whole thing at the time, was that he didn't want her put in danger. And the fact that Batman had hidden that, effectively lied to him, and not revealed that she was actually Batgirl, is one of the reasons that he goes out on his own and becomes Nightwing. So he leaves Batman, and he goes to Bloodhaven, which is a neighboring city, and he kind of starts leading his own life. Yeah, I mean, just how they sort of fold all those things in. A lot of potential, a lot of opportunity. And you know Joss Whedon can do really cool things with that. I mean, he's the Buffy and Angel guy, you know? I mean, even the dynamic of that relationship over Barbara Gordon wanting to make her own difference and be her own person versus Nightwing, who knows what that life's like and doesn't want her to be in it.
Yeah.
You know, and how they play that out on screen is going to, you know, has the potential to be really awesome.
And if they leave Joss Whedon to his own devices and not interfere as much with his work as Marvel did, I mean, we've seen the, we have two Avengers movie to compare, leaving him relatively alone and, you know, interfering with his process. I mean, we also have two Iron Man movies, sure.
So, yes, we have a comparison between leaving Joss Whedon alone to do what he wants and forcing him to put Thor in a hot tub, as he had to do in Avengers 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, hopefully he's learnt from those experiences. But yeah, I mean, as a writer, as being able to build character and also make it funny, smart, and resonant with human stories, I'm quite excited with what's going to happen with Batgirl.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's our that's our movies coverage. We still have TV to go. So
we're back to the X guys, the X bunch.
Back to the X-Men bunch. Yeah. So I mean, there's not really a lot going on here. All I know. So there's an X-Men TV series that's in development. And the biggest news really is that the show's got a title. So Lauren Shirley Donner tweeted out a photo of the cast doing a script read through. The show is titled Gifted, apparently, which is extremely high level information for an X-Men related property.
And it's a great title. Gifted is a great idea. Whoever came up with that should get a raise or an office.
Are you being sarcastic?
No. And I'm sorry. I was, really, because I think it's because the X-Men story is about accepting others as they are,
mm-hmm.
and then you call the show Gifted and not X-Men, which comes with the stigma of being chased, of not being liked by the greater part of society, and then calling it Gifted. Giving the whole thing a positive spin, on being a mutant,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a great idea because going back, the first X-Men movie gave us established that topic that mutants aren't very beloved by society. Even the second one did that with Iceman's parents asking him if he can't at least pretend to be normal.
Yeah,
and so I think Gifted is just. It's a great title. It's a positive title. If it evokes a positive feeling in me, it's not dark and gritty. It feels like a bright X-Men show, and I'm looking forward to it. Yellow spandex for the win.
I get what you're saying. I think just to your point as well with the connotations of the title, if you called it X-Men, as well as being like dark and bringing all those feelings of being pursued, stigmatized, and outcasted, it also puts the focus on the team, whereas Gifted puts the focus on the individual, I feel. So hopefully this is going to be a show that's more about the characters and not so much about what the characters have to do as a team, you know? Because that's where the X-Men movies failed to a large part. It's there were so many characters, there were so many things that the X-Men needed to achieve that character development really suffered. Aside from Wolverine, aside from Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, all the other characters were really bland and kind of, I mean, not forgettable, but at the same time, forgettable, you know? Like, their powers stood out and their costumes and their uniforms stood out, but, like, you really didn't get a sense of you knew who Cyclops was or you knew who Jean Grey was. Iceman, because of that, of those scenes where he goes back home and stuff, maybe you feel a bit sort of closer to him in terms of who he is as a character, but all the others, they're just kind of really bleh, which was disappointing. But hopefully with the TV series, again, they're going to have more time to explore the characters, that they can really spend more time focusing on character development and telling character stories rather than only focusing on, well, we need to make sure we hit these action beats for the plot, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a great example of that is Legion, like really underrated show right now on TV.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're gonna sort of segue into Legion now. So
great segue, an amazing segue, because I wanted to say the same thing.
All right, so you haven't seen the season final, right? So
no,
you've seen everything against the season final. Okay, so we're not going to spoil the season final, but we may spoil everything leading up to the season final. So what are you thinking about Legion? Like, are you enjoying it?
Legion is amazing because it's such a great exercise in restraint and in going all out. Because if you reduce the whole show to settings. You have like 10 settings.
Yeah. It's almost like a play.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it's amazing. Yeah. It's such an economically made thing, and so much is reused, but still feels fresh. And it's for, despite all the flaws that people have with it, it's such an elaborate piece of storytelling, which does so much with so little.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's like really pushing the boundaries of what you can do. Like you said, with not just the settings, but like a small group of people on a small group of locations. It's like Inception.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like Inception, but instead of like a dream within a dream, it's kind of like reality within reality. And it's, and they do that at one point as well. Like they go into, his memories, and he's having a memory inside a memory. And just the way they show that on screen is just so cool.
Yeah. Because it's clearly communicated. You don't get lost. It's such a complex topic, especially with mental illness. So you could have put abstract imagery in there and fill the thing up with just weird images.
Yeah, it's not just cheap shots like that. Like, no. I don't think they use any kind of like stock footage just for shits and giggles.
No.
Or for like cheap thrills, you know? Like you watch some B horror movies and they do that thing where they put in a large sound or like a character coming in from the left, but it's not really supposed to be like the monster. It's just another character, but they just wanted to scare you because they could. But Legion doesn't do that. Like you said, it's very restrained with the way it uses its creepiness and its scariness. But every time it does use it, it's really effective.
Yeah. And just the small things when the psychiatrist stands up to open the closet in like episode 4 or 5.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Oh my God. Don't open the fucking closet. The baldy man is in there and he will eat you alive.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, what's awesome is that at the start, you don't know what it is. And it's almost like Hitchcockian in the sense of it's all about the stuff you don't see. And it's all about the anticipation of what may happen that you're scared of. Because you don't actually see, as you called him, the baldy man, for a long time. Like, you don't see him in full. And what he's not so much capable of, but like what he is, I mean, for a long time. But then all the pieces come together, I think, really well. Like, it's just such a well-executed show in that sense. And that storytelling is just so cool. And it's also great to watch, like the production quality of it, I thought. The design, the costuming, the color palette, the shots, yeah, it's just great.
Every episode felt like watching a movie, but it's a TV production.
Yeah.
That blows my mind.
And what's great, so Legion is a character, so he's effectively like multiple personality. So it's the first episode set in a mental hospital, and he's in there for like paranoid schizophrenia, I believe, right? If I'm remembering the details correctly. So he's got this multiple personality thing happening as a part of the show. And when you watch the Beauty and the Beast movie, at the end, when the beast is transferred back into a man, it's actually Dan Stevens who plays Legion.
Yeah.
So as I was watching Beauty and the Beast and then Dan Stevens shows up, I'm like, oh my God, this whole Beauty and the Beast was just a paranoid delusion inside Legion's mind.
Yeah.
So if you could watch the whole of Beauty and the Beast. So sad.
I joked on Instagram with No But Wait, who's listening to the show. Hi.
I know, but wait.
Shout out to this amazing person. And we joked about the person he plays in Downton Abbey being one of his multiple personalities.
All right. There you go. Everything that Dan Stevens plays from now on is just another personality inside Legion.
It would be amazing.
There we go. That's like, well, I guess those are all multiple studios making all those things, so they can't do like a massive cinematic universe out of it. But
that's what fans are for. We can edit the whole shit together and make our own.
We've got our own headcanon for Legion, yeah. All right, so you've got a note here for the Bill Irwin story.
Yeah.
So what was that?
Okay, I realized that Bill Irwin is playing the scientist character. I forgot his name. And Bill Irwin was...
Carrie?
I'm sorry?
Carrie?
Yeah. And he was in the 90s on tour with a comedy show. And for some reason, I really wanted to watch that show. And my grandmother agreed to go with me. It was called Full Moon. And the first time we arrived at the theater, the fire department didn't give their okay for the performance on that evening because of technical issues. And we exchanged our cards and left the theater. And I was like 11 years old. I was very young, and my English was even worse than it is now. And suddenly a group of people rocks up behind us, apologizes for the inconvenience, and asked if we got new tickets, and wished us a nice evening and bid their farewell. And then I looked at the program that my dad bought for me and said, "Damn, there was Bill Irving apologizing for not being able to perform on stage." And
wow.
I ran after him and got an autograph. And I still have the program, and it's, you know, it's extra special to see him on screen because he was such a nice person.
That's cool.
The performer
that was
coming up.
That was really nice of them as well to come out and sort of see the audience and say sorry. Yeah,
it was an amazing thing. So I have a soft spot in my heart for that person, and it really hurt me to see him beat up after his second personality got captured. Just wanted if Bill Irving listens to the show, you're the best.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, I really felt that. I think when those characters specifically, like Carrie, I think they were both called Carrie.
I can't remember now.
But it was brutal. Like some of those fight sequences, and just the level of damage that the characters take. Yeah, it comes across as painful. And I gotta say, shout out to the makeup effects because they really make it look painful on them as well. So that was great.
And especially when they are in the mental image of the mental institution in the later episodes, the way they interact with each other, it's so the closeness that their powers enable them to feel is portrayed in such a great way, with him knocking before he falls asleep.
Yeah.
So many good things. Watch Legion. Go out there, watch Legion.
Yeah.
Don't stop that podcast. watch it afterwards.
I think Legion is like it's up there. It's one of the coolest shows in TV. Like it's up there with like with Westworld and stuff. Like it's really good. So definitely check it out if you haven't. And then switching now to Samurai Jack. So Jack is back.
Jack is back.
All right. So you're super excited about this one.
Right? Yeah, like Legion. It's a show that dares to be different because there's not much dialogue. A lot is communicated via the imagery, and you know the whole team is embracing new technology. If you watch the old Samurai Jack episodes, which I haven't seen, if I have seen like the first season and parts of the second season, but I'm rewatching it. But these almost silent plays are being continued in the fifth season, and it's such an adult show that uses your memory of old animation and of old shows and of a lot of tropes that we were all raised on to communicate new things. It's a great show. It's astonishing that they brought it back and that they're going all out with the fifth season. Each episode so far has been a joy to watch. It's a testament to Jandy Tartarovsky and everybody at Tartakovsky, to the guy making it, and to the whole team. It's a good time to watch television. 2017 is a good time to watch television.
Yeah. So I've never actually seen Samurai Jack. So what's the premise of the show?
There's a demon called Aku who's got stopped in taking over the world by Jack's father with a magic sword, and he comes back, and Jack's father sends his mother and him off to a journey through the world where he learns sword fighting, philosophy, and so on. And he comes back the ultimate warrior and almost bests Aku, but he casts him off into the future where he has overtaken Earth. And Jack's making his journey back. And season 5 sees him as an immortal being who is struggling with his fate of being immortal and being trapped in hell, leaving his people to suffer under Aku's rule. And he's lost his magic sword, so he doesn't stand. There's no second chance of besting Aku and perhaps returning to the past. And now he has to deal with the future, and it's brutal. It's like he's become this Clint Eastwood like character. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there's very little dialogue, even in the first episode when in the first battle when he rescues a mother and her daughter, they communicate by, they have antennas on their head and they just display the words they're thinking between those antennas.
Seriously.
So even that chance of communication gets...
Is it set in the future? Like it's... how do they not talk? Like, does everybody have antennas? Like,
No. There are other aliens in this as well. There is like this elephant creatures in the first season that have been they've become the slaves of what basically are alien comic collectors, so to say. And they don't talk as well, and it's an amazing show. It's that because the gimmick of it being a silent show, and so many things are acted out non-verbally. That gimmick, it doesn't get old. It's constantly not reinventing itself, but it shows you new things. It's a great series. I'm glad it's back for a final season to give it an ending, and to also show that what's possible with modern technology. Things don't have to look like over the top. They can look like they've been made in the 90s and just received a polishing.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've definitely got me intrigued. So I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to go look it up. So yeah, like you said, I mean, 2017 is just so much on TV right now, just in general, right? It's hard to keep up sometimes.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go from one samurai to another. And so there's a Netflix original show called Samurai Gourmet.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer for this and it just looks, I don't know what to expect, but it's you can explain it.
Okay.
I don't even.
There's a bit of a story behind this as well. There's a show called Midnight Diner, which is also on Netflix, which is about a diner in Tokyo. And the owner only opens from midnight to 7 a.m. And it's, every episode is about one dish. And characters associated, or patrons of the restaurant associated with that dish, and how they interact with each other and how their lives are. And it's a great comfort show. It's amazing. It's a very soothing show. And when I finished watching that, I was recommended Samurai Gourmet. And it's a perfect continuation of that show. It's about a former, how are they called? Not businessman, but company man.
Yep.
Who's we see him he retires from the company, and it's the first day of retirement, and he's suffering. He has this retirement shock for a bit, until he decides to go out of his comfort zone and eat at a restaurant. And in the first episode, he wants to order a beer. But then he thinks, yeah, well, drinking beer in the day isn't something that's appreciated by society, so to say. And then he imagines a samurai, a ronin in this case, a masterless samurai, coming into the restaurant and ordering sake in the middle of the day. And there are employed samurai sitting behind him, and they're giving him shit for drinking during the day. And he doesn't take their shit. He doesn't kill them, but he gives them lip, and
yeah.
they decide to leave the restaurant, and the old man returns from that vision that he has and says, I'm gonna be a samurai gourmet. I'm gonna eat what I want, I'm gonna drink during the day, and I'm gonna live a good life in retirement. Yeah. And it gets even better in the second episode.
So
it's a great show.
Like being a ronin, he goes from restaurant to restaurant and just eats whatever he wants. Like, is that the premise?
That's the premise.
That's kind of what I got from the trailer. In the sense of like he uses the he uses the fantasy of the samurai, of the ronin, to help him get to terms with just doing what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Without feeling the pressure of having to do stuff that he thinks is expected of him.
Yes.
Right? Okay. I mean,
I can relate with that man so much, and I'm not retired. And I think it's
an interesting premise because it's an analogy, isn't it? It's like, I think everyone has that feeling of doing what they feel they have to do versus what they want to do, you know? And so this is taking it and putting it in the context of just something is almost as simple as ordering food at a restaurant, that even that has so much of societal expectation. And so it becomes an analogy for like everything else that you do in life, but doing it in a very mundane kind of humorous way.
And the second episode is even better because it's about how do you react to getting bad food? You know, what if the food isn't prepared to your taste, and how do you communicate that? And it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious. It's a great show to watch in between.
I mean, look, I saw the trailer on Netflix and I'm like, okay, this is interesting, but I don't know. But I will give it another look next time. I need a comfort show.
Yeah, and a palate cleanser after Legion and Gifted and Westworld and all the high concepts of The Expanse, all the high concept stuff that is floating around at the moment.
Yeah, I'm about to start Black Mirror. I haven't actually watched any of the Black Mirror
episodes. Yeah, I have to start that too.
So Black Mirror is supposed to be very, leaves you with a very bad aftertaste. So maybe this is a good antidote to that.
Switch over to the gourmet.
Yeah, Black Mirror with a samurai gourmet chaser. You know? All right, cool. And so the final show that we wanted to just quickly go over today was DuckTales. So a new trailer came out for the new DuckTales TV series.
This will be amazing.
It looks pretty cool. I like how they further developed the story, but I'm remembering the last DuckTales TV series from when I was like 8 years old. So I can't remember the details of Huey, Dewey, and Louie and how the whole thing was set up and all of that. I just know that I enjoyed watching DuckTales as a kid.
That was such a great show.
I love when they meet, is it Scrooge McDuck's daughter or they,
it was the niece of the housekeeper in the original.
Oh, right. Okay. The niece of the housekeeper. And she's so excited to meet Huey, Dewey, and Louie, the triplets. And she goes, you have to tell me everything. And then she asks, who's the evil triplet? And they both point to Louie, I think. And he's just like, yes. So it looks like it's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, and at the end, when the plane's crashing. Oh, the ground.
Yes. And I love how they've... how they've positioned Donald Duck as like this intrepid adventurer, you know. that's really cool.
Yeah,
it's more of a he's more of an Inspector Clouseau type kind of
adventurer. But if they play it right, it could be this generation's DuckTales.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, I love DuckTales, and Tailspin was also
really cool.
Like,
good, yeah.
Those adventure story shows were always lots of fun. And it goes back to that whole, like, that's where Indiana Jones fits as well. You know, it's all about the adventure. It's all about, like, that fusion of adventure, the cool locations, and, like, the archaeological side of things with, like, the mystery and, like, you know, the ancient knowledge and all of that sort of stuff. So DuckTales definitely goes into that. And, yeah, I mean, hopefully... hopefully it's not just a kids show and it's actually watchable for adults as well. So.
And even if it's a great thing to bond over if you're a parent and you know it, it's something you can do with your kids.
Awesome. So cool. So that pretty much covers our movie and TV coverage for this week. So now we're up to a new segment. We're going to call the listener question. So we've got a question this week. So from one of my friends in... Brazil, who asked me this and said it would be a good question to discuss in the show. So from Walter in Brazil, the question is, why doesn't Iron Man make a suit out of vibranium? So when I first posed the question to Martin, he had an awesome reaction.
So and I think we're going to cut. Yeah, I'll cut to it.
Because I've got one from someone at work was also contacted me and they asked, why doesn't Stark create an Iron Man suit out of vibranium?
That's the best question. That is the best question.
All right.
Okay, we're back.
So I got to say, I think I first asked Martin this question about 2 hours ago, and he's still laughing over it. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear what he has to say.
But please start.
I was quite boring with my rationalization of why Iron Man doesn't have a suit made out of vibranium. I think it's established in the lore that vibranium is pretty hard to work with, right? So I think it's not as hard as adamantium, which is the other like fictional metal in the Marvel universe. But I don't think adamantium exists in the Marvel cinematic universe, which is where Iron Man and Captain America and all those guys are. But vibranium, I think they say it's pretty hard to shape and work with, and that's why even creating the shield was like a big deal. How Black Panther is able to weave it into a suit, I'm not sure, but you know, he's got advanced skills with vibranium because it comes from Wakanda. And so, I mean, so that's one thing. And I think the Iron Man suit obviously requires a lot of intricate parts that need to interlock and fit together. So I don't know what the manufacturing process of that would be. So that's kind of a boring manufacturing answer. And then the political answer from my side would be just around the fact that all the vibranium generally comes from Wodonga, which is a town that I lived in Australia. But all the vibranium comes from Wakanda, right? Which is where Black Panther's from. And it's very difficult to actually source vibranium in the world unless you buy it off the black market.
Yep.
And that's what Ulysses Klaue was doing in Avengers Age of Ultron. So they were working with him to get vibranium through the black market. So, you know, both from a sourcing vibranium point of view is quite difficult. And then working and manufacturing with vibranium is also quite difficult. And so seeing as how Iron Man goes through suits like he goes through underwear, I don't think it would be a very economic solution for him. So that's my side of the answer. What's yours?
I think it's a brilliant question because it's basically the end of the MCU if Tony Stark gets that idea, because he doesn't even have to fashion a suit. He just fashions an Iron Man mannequin with a voice box out of vibranium and shows up at every evildoer's plan and just, I'm Iron Man, I'm here to stop him. And I just, the first image that came to my mind was the Iron Man mannequin standing in the middle of a crater while every bad guy is punching on it and they're just exhausting themselves while all the Avengers are standing around the crater with a coffee mug, you know,
and eating popcorn.
Yeah, and enjoying their time and just waiting until everybody's exhausted and they just put handcuffs on them and put them in jail. It's such an amazing idea because the Iron Man vibranium mannequin is the secret hero of the whole Marvel universe.
That maybe that's the end game. Maybe Tony's like, look, if it ever gets to that, I've got the mannequin waiting.
It's the solution in Infinity War. He just rolls the thing out and smashes it at Thanos and bang, it just bangs up. Like there's no tomorrow and he can't do anything because vibranium is taking out the kinetic energy in the MCU as well.
It's just absorbing all the kinetic universe.
Yeah,
all the kinetic energy in the universe.
doesn't matter. It would be just so amazing. all this thing. Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, all the struggle. Everything could have been that the ultimate solution is the Iron Mannequin. That's the ultimate. Or the Vibranium Mannequin. That's the ultimate solution. It's such a great idea. It's such a great idea.
All right. Now, the flip side of it, not so much the flip side, but like, don't we already have that situation though? Isn't Vision made out of vibranium?
Is he made out of vibranium? I don't know. I think he was made. He was made out of vibranium. Yeah, he was born in the recombination thing that gave Hawkeye skin.
No. So, the skin thing. Yeah, it's the skin thing was like one of those. I think it was the same device or the same box.
Yeah.
But so that, you know, going back to Avengers Age of Ultron, right?
Yeah.
Ultron wants to craft a new body for himself. So he buys, he's the one that goes to buy the vibranium off Ulysses' claw. He takes that vibranium to South Korea, where the skin grafting box thing is, and he works with that female doctor to make the body, which Vision ends up being born into. Right? So that body is actually made out of vibranium.
Yeah, but... You know, they combined it with artificial organic tissue. So it's not completely
it's not pure vibranium.
You know, the spaces between his toes are made of organic tissue. And he has adamantium boots. It's amazing. I hope Marvel listens to this.
I gotta say, this is the most I've ever heard Martin laugh in my life. This is crazy.
You know, it becomes the ultimate solution to everything. You know, just send Vision in. You know, it's been made up by his instructor.
I mean, by the same token, though, that's what Black Panther's suit's made out of. It's an adamantium suit, right? I'm sorry, it's a vibranium suit. Yes. Vibranium weave suit. So he, at the same time, also can take any punch. I mean, and we discussed that. So there's that scene in Civil War where he's on the rooftop and they're shooting at him from the helicopters. And he's that there is no... The bullets have no stopping power because they're just bouncing off him because it's absorbing all of the energy.
And it just skulls at the helicopter from which they're shooting at him. It's amazing. Walter, you are a genius. You know, that points out we should have known about this stuff before asking this question. I mean, we should have known about this. It's just a logical part of our brains putting this information because it knows nothing makes sense anymore.
Well, yeah, it's like we've managed to compartmentalize it all away.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So there you go. So if Iron Man, I think Walt is effectively solved. That's the end game of the Marvel Universe. I think we just need to, like, Iron Man has just got that vibranium suit waiting. And if he ever, at the moment, he's like, nah, if I use it now, it's just going to be too easy. So he's just waiting. He's just waiting to use it.
And Robert Downey Jr. could sell such a scene. If they're all beaten up and he comes in with the Downey Jr. bravado, and here's the solution to all our problems ever.
Yeah. It's like, all right, it's endgame time, people. I'm sick of this. I need to go home and have some shawarma.
And then he presses the big red reboot button. Phase one again.
Yeah. Cool. Really good thought experiment, definitely.
Yeah.
We know now, just from what we've discovered, that vibranium can be, I guess, manipulated into a suit, how it would function if it were a suit. And then if that suit was the Iron Man suit, it would just be the next level out. So, Walter, you're a genius.
Yeah, you're a genius. Thank you so much for that question.
So I think that was a lot of fun. We're gonna try to have a discussion like this at the end of the next episodes as well. So if there's any other questions that you have or anything else that you
we need your help
to talk about,
please make me laugh.
Yeah, that's actually the name of the segment. It's Make Martin's Day. So. All right, cool. Oh.
You know, I'm still so thinking about all those guys punching on that thing and, you know, taking turns.
You just love that visualization of, like, inside of, like, he's just standing there in the middle of a crater and everyone's trying to take him down, but they can't, right?
They just can't. And the world is this big utopian place and everybody's living in peace because all the assholes are trying to kill Iron Man. Whole nations are putting millions and millions of dollars in to take down Iron Man, you know, and the rest of the world can live happily ever after.
At the end of the day, he didn't need to put a dome around the world. He just needed to put a vibranium dome around himself. Oh, dear. All right, cool. Well, that is episode 3 of season 2 of Asteroids in Exile. So I hope everyone had as much fun as we did.
Yeah, that was so much fun. Thanks again, Walter. Please send in questions. asteroidsinexile@gmail.com.
And we have a Twitter now, too. So
yeah,
you can tweet us at asteroidsin.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't fit the exile in there.
It's on my list. You know, I have... So much shit has been going down those last few weeks, but it's on my list to find a suitable Twitter handle because AIE podcast was already taken.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, well, we'll just keep it for Asteroids In for the moment. Yeah, so watch that space. Cool. So thanks, everyone, for listening. If you made it this far, yeah, we're about...
Thank you so much. You are saints.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And we'll see you next time.
Until then.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. I have actual laughing sweats under my armpits.